Welcome, y'all! This is the Pre-Game Engineer Tailgate Mayor Racing Podcast, episode number 133. It's Thursday, February 8th, 2018. I was like, is that the right date? Yes, it is. I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace. I'm joined in the PTM Podcast Studio on the second night in a row, Sherwin.
And I can't believe how long it's been since we last did one of these shows.
It's been like 24 hours.
Certainly we wanted to do this one.
We couldn't decide when to do a show, Wednesday or Thursday, so we said, let's just do both. As you can see, if you're on the YouTube, we've got a very special guest tonight. But before we get to him, we got to let you know where this whole thing's coming from. Got to read this for the second time in 2 days, Sherwin. Here we go.
Woo.
This podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. You go to patreon.com/PTM. Join the What You Drinking Club for as little as $1 a month. Get that free koozie. Best part is, every cent in 2018, we're donating to sponsoring drivers just like last year. So join the PTM Posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. Our show tonight is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and up per month level. That is Catherine Kingston, Ashley Stang, Laura Henshaw, Harry Balzania, Mick Rose, Aaron Bearden, Robert Keplinger, Tony Salt, Kobe McClam, Eric Kepner, Ryan Kiefer, Marion Levesque, Patrick Cleary, Jeff Brown, Brandon Crowd, Kathleen McDonald, Stacey Wright, Brandon Carl, Billy Workman, Rika Porter, and Jumpy Bob and Les Miller. Thank y'all so much.
How freaking cool is it that many people want to hear what we want to do? Not only hear what we want to do, but want to, like, support our cause,
right?
To donate to racing.
And right.
That's really neat.
It's so. Yeah. The crew is growing. Somebody, Beast says on the YouTube. Yes, the crew is growing. I have to do like three.
I love your read. It's awesome.
I use a lot of hands in that one. So,
yeah.
before
so
we go too
and
off
bring
the rails,
in
let's
who
do
we
it.
Got on the phone just to make sure everybody knows what we got here.
He's our inaugural PhD of the PETM.
Yeah,
posse.
The emeritus.
That's right. He needs no intro. Our good friend Tommy Joe Martins. What's up, Tommy?
What's up, boys? I remember when that list was about five people.
Right.
And now it's taking you like a full 30 seconds to read that thing off. That's pretty cool.
Oh, man. It's really cool what people are doing, because especially with, you know, we're just giving all the money away to somebody. You know, just the fact that people want to support and stuff, I don't know what to say. It's so neat that happens. All the sponsorship stuff we were looking into doing, and I was like, well, maybe like $20 a month, and then at the end of the year we'll have $200 or something. And now every one of those people is at least $5 a month. It's like, good grief, y'all are so cool. So
yeah, I don't know, pretty what
to
awesome, say. Man.
Yeah, it's that's fun.
But you know what? Hats to you guys. I remember we talked early on in this thing, and I said the biggest thing is just staying with it, and y'all have stayed with it. So it's awesome. Here we are again, back at it.
You know what's funny is that I think we've started to give that advice to other people who are – yeah. There's several more podcasts now, and it's really cool. And we'll talk to them, and we always say to them exactly what you said right there, which is you got to keep at it. You just got to keep going. Week over week, just make some time. Just talk. Do like you normally do. You'll make mistakes. We just made one earlier if you're not listening on the YouTube. We actually started the show, and I had the wrong microphone selected. And so halfway through our intro song, I'm like, this ain't right. Oops. And we stopped it and had to start over. So, yeah, we didn't get
Doesn't
far.
Doesn't have
in.
To be perfect.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't have to be perfect. Just got to be out there.
That's right. So, Tommy, you've had to you did a refill during our little deal there. What you drinking tonight?
Okay, we got to pour a little bit out here, boys.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I'm drinking. Hang on, just got to pour a little bit out. Just got to pour a little out.
Oh crap!
RIP. Coors Light. What was the official beer of NASCAR for a long time? Now is no longer the official beer of NASCAR. So that's what I'm drinking tonight.
All right. Are they? Right. Did they say what they're going to do with like the poll award? Is that different now?
Yeah, it's different. They've exited the poll award. They reduced Brad Keselowski's primary sponsorship to, I think, 12 races.
Oh.
Good grief.
We got to call up Miller Coors and be like, hey, man.
What y'all doing? I mean, look at me. I'm drinking Miller
this
Lite.
This is what What's we drink. On? I mean, you're drinking a Miller Lite Tall Boy right now, an old school dressed white can. We've been Miller Lite supporters for years, and when we weren't drinking Miller Lite, we were drinking Coors.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're kind of on the same page. I wonder what NASCAR is going to do to fill the hole of that sponsorship.
Yeah. Is it?
So that means in the last 3 years, Budweiser is no longer sponsoring a car. Miller Lite is down to a 12 race primary, and Coors Light, which has been in the sport since I can even remember with the Silver Bullet card, Sterling Marlin and Kyle Petty and all this, and that, you know, even though they got off a car, at least they were sponsoring the pole award. They were the official beer of NASCAR. Now they're not going to be in it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, here's the thing. So InBev has got, you know, they've got control of all the Anheuser-Busch stuff. So all of the Kevin Harvick Busch paint schemes will be owned under, like, the marketing brand of InBev. So there is that. They haven't totally exited. But I'm more worried about Miller Coors. Like, it feels like they're doing their best effort to exit. And, golly, Miller was such a huge brand. And if you just go back to Miller High Life with Bobby Allison in the
80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it transitioned to Rusty, which we have,
there's a namesake thing there.
A transitional connection there. Rusty with the Miller Genuine Draft, and then Miller Lite, and now Brad. So it's like, I totally agree. Like, beer brands should be NASCAR, right? You're allowed to bring beer into the stands.
Yeah, and like
you would think that beer brands, especially major ones like that, Budweiser, Coors Light, Miller Lite, they should be beating the door down to get on a race car. And the fact that they're doing the opposite, how does that not scare everybody? Does that not bother everybody?
No kidding. And I mean, it's almost a tradition, right? So you're sitting in the stands and you got your Miller Lite and you're looking around. Oh, that dude's got Budweiser. Screw him. Oh, there's a Coors Light guy. All right.
Start a fist fight, even.
Yeah. How am I going to know who to fight with?
If Rusty and who would have been in, who was the, it was Ricky Craven, the Bud car in the late 90s. If Rusty and Ricky Craven had gotten into an accident in the mid-90s, there would have been a fist fight in the stands between a guy holding a Budweiser and a guy holding a Miller.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Tommy, we'll get right into all the goings-on and everything, but before we do, car number 33 for our 133rd episode. Car number 33, won most times by Harry Gant. How about that?
Handsome Harry Gant in that beautiful green and white Skull Bandit.
What a great car.
Wasn't it? 397 races.
You know when a car is great? When the car itself has a name. So you got something called the Skull Bandit, and that's literally the name of the car. That's awesome. Is there anything cooler than that? You get to drive the Skull Bandit. That's awesome.
And how cool was it that the initiation of that team was, the movie stars? It was Smokey and the Bandit meets Stan Barrett and whoever else that was involved in that deal. To create a cup car. That's pretty cool.
Like, that to me is like, when they talk about, like the Silver Bullet and the race car is silver and all that. I don't know if brands are doing a good enough job with that nowadays, and I'm picking on sponsors a little bit there, but that's a good one, the one you just brought up, Harry Gant. First of all, Harry Gant is awesome and like an American legend at this point. But then the car itself was associated with the brand so well that you got the name of the car and all that. That is like how you do it. I mean, that is how you do it. That's a car and a paint scheme and all of that, that's perfect for NASCAR advertising.
How many other cars, and I can only do one or two, like, have a name? Like, the T-Rex car is the one I'm thinking of, Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, 97 at the shootout.
Right.
It was the All-Star race.
Yeah, the built from the ground up.
Gordon's car, that DuPont car, and the Rainbow Warriors with the pit crew and all that, like, to me, that's pretty cool. That's a good job.
What other cars are named?
You could come up with some different ones. I'd have to think about
the Tide Ride, maybe.
Earnhardt scheme. I mean, when it's GM Goodrich Service and it's a guy named the Intimidator and he's driving a black car. Mm-hmm. Like, how perfect is that? Like, that's pretty great.
Yeah, no, I think Rusty made a good point there. Tide Ride for sure.
Yeah.
Which we just saw show up in the feed there. And the ones that are like super iconic. Holy cow.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, do we even have iconic paint schemes anymore? Let's think about that. I mean, how do you have an iconic paint scheme if you're changing it every other weekend?
It's a good point.
To your point.
about sponsorship. Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, no, as a paint scheme, I mean, like, when I mean, when Jeff left, that was the last kind of iconic. I mean, shoot, I'm trying to think now. Because there's throwback stuff, right? Like Dylan in the three doing the Intimidator kind of ish car.
Well, which is the brand, though, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
We don't have, Goodwrench is gone because GM was. GM failed worse than any other of the American car brands. So, I mean, not to bring us down, but I'm going to bring us right back up. You know, DuPont has a history of selling things that are awesome to people that create brands.
Yeah.
That's what Exalta is. That's what Envista was. Now, most people won't know what Envista is because they don't have any relationship with nylon yarn. Because they,
no one knows about like, nylon
that's
yarn.
Not a consumer product.
Yeah.
Like, you only really have relationships with consumer products. So, I mean, I don't know where I was going with that beyond what I just said. You know.
It's just sponsor info in the background of this. But think about, like, the way that sponsors are changing here. We're not seeing big brand companies. Like, I mean, Target isn't sponsoring a car this year. Like, how does Target not have a car?
Yeah.
How does Walmart not sponsor a NASCAR race car in the Cup Series?
Well, how does
Just stuff like that. I mean, Budweiser, Miller Lite, Coors Light. Like, these sponsors... Why are they not just knocking the door down to get on a Cup car for a full year deal? And it's pretty simple. They don't see the return on the money.
That's what I was going to say.
They feel like they can get a way better return on their money somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's simple.
Without a doubt. And what's really funny about that is when you try to connect it to what the other major sports in America are, we just had the Super Bowl, right? And people are talking about, oh, my God, somebody paid $4.5 million for this really crappy commercial. I'm like, they only paid $4.5 million if the ratings hit the mark that they sold it at.
Well,
because on Monday morning, if the ratings were 10% less than what they sold it at, they pay 10% less.
Right. Well, so now you got racing, which is on TV. And you want coverage on television, and the ratings keep going down, and you wonder why. And yet the price to sponsor a race car continues to go up, and you go, I mean, if you're an ad executive, right? I mean, that's what we don't do a good enough job of, really, as a culture, is put ourselves in somebody else's shoes every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just think about this for a second. If you're an ad exec, rather than making the sponsor out to be the bad guy, if it's your job to spend the company's money wisely – how could you possibly look at NASCAR and go, yeah, that looks like a really good investment of our money?
Oh, that's great. That's an absolutely fantastic perspective. So one of the things that I was asked today by somebody who is super smart, and I don't say that because he once hired me to do a job. I say that because he is actually super smart.
Brown noser.
How can we afford to sponsor this car at this level in this circumstance? And I'm said, well, the activation situation suggests that the value of that sponsorship is XYZ. But if we, it only does though, if we get, you know, XYZ number of people to watch this race. And the hardest.
See, that's where I think sponsorship is headed though. Like what you just said right there, that word activation, excuse me, that's a really cool word. Sponsors like to throw around, but it's basically saying to me, as the guy that's driving the car, they're saying, hey, we don't really care about people watching you drive this car. We want to put our name on the car, and then we're going to do some cool stuff with the fact that we actually have a race car.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what that is. That's like the money we're spending there is just the ticket to buy into the show. But like, I guess the activation would be like, telling everybody that you went to go see the show. Like, you know what I'm saying? And that, which is like far greater influence. And maybe that's not the best metaphor here, but same sort of idea where the actual race car itself, where we used to think of the 90s, that's what it was. It was like, all right, put your name on the side of the car. Here's the check. Well, that's not moving the needle anymore. The fact that you have a car out there. So it's like, not only do they have to pay a crazy amount of money to get their name on the car now, then they have to spend more money to tell people and to activate the sponsorship about having the car. So it's like, why are you even spending money on the car?
That's a good point. It doesn't make,
like, what the heck's going on? It's like, well, if you wanted to get a billboard, just go buy a billboard. But, like, that's right. Activation. Like, and I've had sponsors in meetings tell me that. Like, well, I can't sponsor you for $200,000 because we're going to want to at least spend that in activation, and we really don't want to spend $400,000.
Wow.
And I go, you sit there and you go, well, just sponsor me for $100. You know, I mean, that's the comeback.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've already told them how much it costs. So you can't really go back and be like, well, I'll do it for less, because that makes you sound like you're lying to them in the first place.
Right.
Because then they're going to go, why, you know, were you ripping me off? So you're just put in this no-win situation when you're trying to talk to somebody, because you sit there and you go, especially for somebody like me, where it's like, we're going to drive for a small team. Probably the best we're going to probably do is, I mean, then again, I say this, we finished 11th last year, and BJ McLeod as a team had like four top 15s. So it's not like it just never happened. But for the most part, you're sponsoring a car in the mid-pack. It's not going to be shown. But yet we still need $20,000 to $30,000 per race in sponsorship to just go be okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, how is that okay? Like, it's just too much money. Like, nobody can afford that. And I've had people be like, well, I can give you a couple thousand. And that's like all they can give, and it just doesn't add up. It's just the whole numbers of the thing do not add up, and especially the return on investment is just not there. I don't think it is, and I sound like I'm rocking the boat here when I say something like that. Like, I'm a driver. I should be saying how great it is to sponsor a race car, but it's hard for me to sell something I don't deeply believe in. Like, I think it's a fun thing. Like, if a sponsor just had a little bit of money to throw around and they enjoy the engagement of it, that's fine. Like somebody like FedEx, I've literally sat down with the marketing executive for FedEx because I'm from Memphis and I just had connections to be able to just talk to the guy and find out about how the sponsorship worked, more like research than anything else. And he told me that racing was the only thing that all of their clients said they had to do.
Mm.
That they've tried to stop before, and all of the people they do business with said, hey, you can't do that. We like going to the races too much. And so FedEx was like, okay, fine. Because they weren't going to lose these big contracts over the fact they didn't have a NASCAR team. So they just said, all right, fine, we'll stay in. And so they're kind of like getting held at gunpoint to stay in, but they really didn't want to in the first place. And so that to me is like, if that isn't racing and sponsorship in a nutshell, like, I don't know what it means. It's like the sponsors that are in there are they doing it reluctantly at this point?
Like,
what's actually going on?
The ROI stuff is, I would love to see something on that. I don't know. And it feels like, just like we have the smaller teams coming in and stuff and small team stuff, we'll get to that in a minute too. But we have, you know, maybe it's a good comeback time for the small sponsors, the one timers or the, you know, whatever else they can get some face time there. The ROI part is that's really interesting to me in terms of what do people expect to get back? If we just talked about Super Bowl, right? What was that? Yeah. You said $4 million, Sherwin? $4 million gets you a 30-second ad or something?
Well, ultimately they posted it was $5 million.
So I mean, 30 seconds. Say it's $5 million for 30 seconds, yeah. Right? Are you going to get more out of that with all those eyeballs at one time in this one space and be talked about in terms of the, you know, hey, Super Bowl commercials, if you get one that's funny enough, you're going to get your stuff, you know, retweeted and they're going to talk about it on the news like they did with Tide this year, you know, with Tide having all those, right, you know, cool ads and stuff.
P&G spent.
So they spent some money on that.
$1 trillion.
But the point there is you can do that, or you can sponsor. What's $4 million get you? Or what's $5 million get you in NASCAR right now? Half a season?
Oh, it gets you
five races.
That's unreal
on a Hendrick car.
That's unreal. And five races doesn't get you nothing. I mean, think about Dog Days of Summer and stuff, and you know, people going to the or even late summer, and people are going to the lake and stuff, and they miss a race, miss two races or something. I guess the average fan.
What happens if the car blows the tire?
Right.
What happens if you have an engine trouble? What happens if you just are a little bit off that weekend and you're running 27th, which can happen in the Cup Series in that long?
Right, right. And you're $5 million, you go, hey, where'd that go?
What happens when you're leading at Michigan and you hit the wall at a billion miles an hour and you completely destroy the car?
Right, right. So I don't know. I don't know what to say there.
But now I would say to Diamond Gusset Jeans at this point, my former sponsor.
Yep.
They would say, man, we really hate that you crashed, which unfortunately that's something that happened a lot in 2016. But, hey, at least we got a little bit of TV time out of it. Which, then again, think about what you're really talking about. You're talking about wrecking a $15,000 to $20,000 worth of damage to a race car to get 15 seconds worth of TV time. Like, was that really worth it? No, it wasn't.
It's a good question.
Well, on a broadcast that only got 800,000 views. So, totally agree with you, Tom.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
15 seconds for 800,000 people.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I don't know if that's worth it.
And what's your engagement, on that? Maybe 1%, 800 people that might go, oh, Diamond Gusset, I've never heard of them. And 1% of that, 80 people that are going to buy something. 80 people buying
800 people check it out, and then how many of those people actually buy something?
Yeah.
20.
Right. So you sell
20 total.
Yeah. Or you might sell 50 pairs of jeans on that. And I feel
not
like I'm
for the $20,000 worth of damage on that car.
I feel like I'm pooping on Tommy here. I hope I'm not.
Well, we're not trying to poop on Tommy or Diamond. It's just trying to understand what the market value of these sponsorships are and what the relationships is between how you run the race, how you finish the race, and all of the weird ass things that can happen during a race, which is including wrecking the truck or wrecking the car.
Yeah. Cliff Doherty just asked, is this live? I hope my reading of that,
what are we about?
Answers that question.
Behind?
Exactly.
Good point. That got B1624. Oil companies don't even sponsor racing. So literally, the people that sell the fuel and the lubricants don't sponsor the cars anymore.
It's, man,
like, what is going on? You got to ask these questions where you go, okay, wait a minute now. Let's just take a step back and go, realistically, what should this be? Yeah. It should probably be, we get an outside evaluator, tell us what is the sponsorship on the car really worth when it comes to eyeballs on the TV set, social media engagement, other stuff that we do outside of just the track, like with the driver being associated with our brand and the stuff that he does. What is that number realistically worth? And don't get that information from a team. Do not get that information from NASCAR, get it from an outside company that's sitting there looking at it going, okay, you got $1 million, what is the best bang for your buck right now in sports? Because for NASCAR, the way that they're going to have to get that engagement back is they're going to have to be that, which is why tying this back, and this is like patting myself on the back, but whatever, tying this back to last year, I did a post with Jeff Gluck where I basically said, you got to pay the teams more, and the teams have to be in the green prize money wise, and all sponsorship just has to be additional revenue. So the team itself can survive and pay the driver at all three of the top national series. And then if they get sponsorship, it can just be extra. And they can charge whatever they want to charge. That's fine. But a sponsor can look at it and go, well, or the team isn't going to have to just do whatever they got to do to try to break even. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the sponsorship money coming in would just be additional revenue, and that's nice if we get it, but if we don't get it, we can still at least get by.
So,
and that would really change things, I think. And it would change the interaction with the sponsor as well, because they'd go, well, your sponsorship is realistically worth $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is a race, and you just go, okay, fine. Like, that doesn't bother me. Give me the $10,000. Rather than trying to chase after the money.
What do you think about like the micro transaction sponsorship? I mean, hell, what we're doing here with the PTM podcast, that people are doing a dollar at a time, or we've seen some amount of success with like Jordan Anderson on his truck, and he went through a lot of trouble writing every person's name on there, which is really cool. But I mean, on top of that, just the
the microtransaction stuff, and if that is a viable sponsorship. We saw it with who was it that ran the Dogecoin car?
Yeah, that was Josh Wise.
Josh Wise. Yeah. And is that a viable option, or is that something that's just kind of a flash in the pan? What do you think?
Okay, so this is like my hot take deal.
Okay.
And I'm going to try really hard not to poo on this, because the thing is, what you do with your money is completely up to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely up to you. It's your money. You can do whatever you want. If you love Jordan Anderson and you want to support Jordan Anderson, that's fine. It's totally fine. But Tommy Joe Martin's, I'm fine. I don't need your money. I don't need your $2. You know, like, my race car to fix it is going to cost a whole heck of a lot of money, and I don't need your $20. Like, I will figure it out. And what I really want is an actual real sponsor that believes in me and what I'm trying to do with my career, that wants to sponsor me the right way. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm hunting for. That's what I'm sending out emails and press releases and all that kind of stuff we do to try to get. So to me, I just don't want to go on there and have to ask normal everyday people, whether they're my fans or whatever. To me, I just don't like that. I just don't like it. It's not something I'm ever going to do. And it's not, I'm not ripping the guys that do it. I'm not. I get it. It's all done in good spirits. And all the people that give their money, it is totally up to you. You don't have to give them money. That's fine. But I am never going to get online and put up like a GoFundMe page for me going racing. Well, I'm never going to do that ever, because if I couldn't afford it, I wouldn't do it. Now, this is also coming from a guy that complained about how much it cost the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I understand the oxymoron here. I mean, I get it. But the fact that it cost too much didn't change the fact that my family had enough money to be able to do this for a while. So me asking somebody for $50 is just, to me, that would be really, really slimy to for me and my perspective.
My question isn't, I guess, aimed at Tommy Joe Martin's as much as, is it a viable thing, you know, going forward or in the future or something, if let's say Casey Kane does this, right? And me and Sherwin are fans of Casey Kane, so we sling $20 a month each into that, and there are 50,000 other people, maybe not 50,000, 10,000, whatever number of people who do that. Obviously, you can do that math, that suddenly come out to $20,000 or whatever a month. But is that a viable next step in this? Or, like I said, is that flash in the pan kind of, this is what's happening right now, who knows what will happen?
Think about what you're doing. Think about what you're doing, though, fellas. I mean, you're basically throwing money into just a pit of fire. I mean, it's really what you're doing. And that was my issue with the whole thing. It's like, okay, I go and ask people for this money right now. What happens the next time something breaks?
Mm-hmm.
What happens the next time I wreck something? I got to ask again? So let's say Casey Kane does that. I know we're just throwing a name out there, so no offense. Casey, if you're listening to the podcast, we're not saying you're begging for
if
money.
Casey's listening to this podcast, then I am beside myself. Then we'll retire tomorrow. Yeah. We hit our pinnacle.
If we get shot in the back of the head because Casey's people are not super chill with what we're
I'll beg
about.
For it. I'll beg for it. Yeah, right here, right here.
No,
then.
I think to your point, you're making a great point, Tommy. So keep going.
So like, you're basically, Casey Kane is what, begging you to pay his salary at that point? You know, and that's the issue with like Danica. That's the issue with any of these guys like Greg Biffle and all the people that are now like semi-retired, right? Is like, what did they get famous for being? They got famous for being a race car driver. That's what got them money in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you're not a race car driver, how do you make money?
You don't
make money.
Those
you're
are
just
awesome
not doing anything.
Things.
Yeah.
You know, but for Casey Kane at that point, it's like, Casey, you've gotten to drive for Dodge at their peak. You've gotten to drive for Hendrick Motorsports for years. You're getting to drive, Levine Family Racing, who's whatever, clearly
trying
to
prove
their
craft. Yeah, they drove for Richard Petty Motorsports when it was the crappiest it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And but still the point won is a that race. Casey Kane has had a 20-year cup career. So if you get to the end of it and you're sitting there basically begging for money from strangers online, to me, that is really degrading yourself.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I understand.
That's a good point. Then again, I feel like that's the way things are going, and the way And there's the
who's actually doing that though?
Well, nobody's doing that here yet. I'm wondering in the future is that a viable option for people, and will people like Tommy change your mind on that it's begging for money as much as this is just how sponsorship works?
Yeah, right. And that's the difference, right? It's like, well, what is a sponsor? It's basically me begging a company for money.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I guess in a weird way, it just feels a lot less slimy than asking individuals for money. And this is, again, this is a personal preference thing. And if you ask every driver in the garage this question, you would get a different answer for everybody. You really would.
I've talked to guys that said,
this is totally fine. I get it. This is just the world we live in. I've talked to guys that said, that is a last resort, and I'm never going to do that ever.
So,
I'm not talking about small-level drivers here. I don't want to name drop on this deal, but it's like I'm talking about guys that are in premier rides right now that have said, because we've laughed about it, and they've gone, no, that's not something I would ever do. So if you ask 40 people, you get 40 different answers.
This is a good time to remind everyone to go to patreon.com/PTM and donate.
Boom.
As little as $1 a month.
Hell yes. Get them.
No, I love it. No, that's, yeah, I love this talk.
See, you guys are doing, thinking about this though, you're doing this for free right now. For free.
Always will.
I have no problem. And this started out as a hobby, and it's like turned into something that people are really engaged with. I have no problem with you guys going, hey, you know what? We got to set up time out of our lives to do this. I got to set up guests. We got to do the production on this deal. We got to post it. We got to keep up with it. We got to run the Twitter account. I have no problem with you guys going, hey, would you mind kicking us a few bucks? What's wrong with that? And people going, hey, I really like this. We want to kick you a few bucks. That's fine.
The fortunate thing for me and Sherwin is we both have jobs in the STEM industry, and we were like, well, if we start asking for money, what are we going to do with it? And why don't we just donate it away, or whatever you want to call it, sponsor a car? And to your point, man, help me out with this, because we have been working. I thought it would be really easy to give money away to somebody, and it has been really difficult to.
It's almost impossible
To donate. We've got $1,200-something, $1,263.58, I believe, something like that.
Yeah,
I'm crazy with numbers, so it sticks in my mind.
That's awesome.
But we're trying to give it away, and it's hard to do. Like, people are like, well, you got to talk to this guy. Now you got to talk to this guy's guy, and then you got to do that. I'm like,
I think we're giving it to Jesse.
Here's what you boys need to do. This is realistic.
Okay.
You don't need to give it to anybody in NASCAR.
Right.
Because I'll tell you,
$1,200. Well, we know that. That buys like half a tire.
Half a set of tires.
Yes, exactly.
So exactly.
That's a bad move. You need to give it to somebody that needs it the most and deserves it the most, right? So it needs to be somebody at a really low level, local track, doing things the right way, that people really respect, that we can all sit there and go, hey, that's pretty cool what they did there. They basically paid for a weekend of racing out of his 8 or 10 race season, and that's really neat. You know, so I'm talking about somebody in like a bomber class at the dirt track or something like that.
Oh,
you know,
shit,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. That type of thing, or
like up at how
you guys have people nominate people for this.
Rained out.
nominate your local racer.
Right, right, and
well, we try to do that.
We've talked about we've talked on the show with Legends Car racers, especially the ones out of Atlanta that we've gone and seen race and then interviewed and talked to, and it's like, let's give you money. Okay, well, you need to talk to these people and these people, and I'm like, dadgummit. And I use stronger language than that.
Can't we just give you a check and slap a PTM sticker on your car?
Right.
And let's get her done.
Right.
Shut up and take my money.
Yes. Right out of Futurama. Shut up and take my money.
Okay. You know, the thing is, though, boys, this thing has gotten so twisted. It has gotten so twisted and messed up. That really good quality guys that are friends of mine in this deal are running through agencies that are doing absolutely nothing for them and are somehow getting a cut of any sponsorship money that they found that walks up to them.
That sucks.
And I have no idea. I have talked to multiple people where I have said, why are you dealing with these people? Because I just asked the question, why? I think this is this weird thing that I do. And I found out that I guess I'm just kind of an abnormal person because I ask that question a lot. I just ask the question, why? You know, when somebody says, oh, man, I just put down this down payment on a $300,000 house, I go, why? you have $300,000? Well, no, but I mean, that's just what the market is. That to me isn't like a good enough reason, you know, like that's just not, it's not good enough. And so when people, somebody tells me, well, I'm signed up with a marketing agency that's handling other drivers, I go, why? And they go, well, because they manage Kyle Larson and they manage whoever else. And I go, are they getting you a seat? Well, no. Okay, well, then what are they doing for you? Are they taking you to events and promoting you? No. Oh, are they doing something with your social media account? Or are they, I mean, what are they doing for you? Well, I mean, you know, if I get any sponsors, they help come talk to them. I was like, so you do the legwork and they come in and close it for you? Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, they're, I mean, they're not exactly.
So basically, you do all the work and then they get a cut of it. And then it's basically your money that you take to a team that you pick. So what the heck are they doing?
It's right out of Office Space, right? Like, I'm a people person, dadgummit. What the hell is wrong with you people?
What's wrong with you people?
You know, so think about like the way that NASCAR works nowadays. And the thing is you guys have been around this now. You've talked to enough people. This is real simple how this works. You have money behind you that you round up. And you take it to a team. It's that simple. The team is not signing anybody. The team is not doing anything. The people that are on that list of people that are actually getting paid by a team,
mm-hmm.
like as in, we don't care if there's a sponsor on the car at all. We're paying you no matter what. That list is so low, it could probably be less than 10 people in the entire sport.
Wow.
Literally everybody else has a personal sponsor behind him that says, no, I just really like Ryan Newman. We want to keep Ryan Newman in the 31 car. It's something like that. And I just use that as an example. But basically everybody else is, they bring some sponsorship money along. I mean, I want you to think about John Hunter Nemechek right now, who's a guy that I've talked about multiple times because I think he is like one of the biggest badasses in the sport right now. He is just freaking awesome.
That's cool.
He's over there at Ganassi, right?
Yep.
They did a press release. They said, John Hunter Nemechek signed up partial season with Ganassi. You know what that press release said in the very next paragraph?
What's that?
It said, with sponsorship from Fire Alarm Services.
Who?
What do you know? It was the same sponsor on his truck last year. Odd, oh, wow. Huh? That he got the Ganassi ride. You think he got the Ganassi ride just because they were like, we want to pay John Hunter? No. John Hunter had a sponsor. He took it to a really good ride. I'm sure Chip Ganassi looks at John Hunter and goes, you know what? I got Jamie McMurray. He's probably going to retire in a few years. John Hunter could be a badass. But that's not why he signed him. He signed him because he also brought some money. He wouldn't have done it just for free. That wouldn't have happened.
Don't talk about Jamie McMurray like retiring in a few years. I always think of him as like the young guy, and if he retires, then like I'm old.
He's like the second oldest guy out there now.
I mean, look at this. I've got like, all this gray hair and 40, stuff. And,
he's 42 now.
Don't tell me that. He's 28, and that's how old he always is. Shut your mouth, Rusty.
I will hit you in the face. I'm talking here. We will fist fight after this podcast is over.
No, we're doing it now.
Jamie still runs.
Max, underrated guy, man. Jamie Max, really good driver.
Oh, I love him. He's absolutely fantastic. He makes a chase every year. He's won, I think, five races over his career, which means that he's should be lauded at least as good as Jeremy. I forgot the last name. That's fine. Like, his consistency is great, but,
Yeah, that's where it's at. We're, what's funny? What got us started on this whole thing was talking about Harry Gant, and we went down, like, the
Handsome Harry.
We went down the grandpa story, like, for the last 30 minutes or so, which is awesome. I want to close out real quick.
With?
Clint Bowyer had 3 wins in 33. Joe Nemechek.
The Cheerios car.
We just talked about Nemechek, so a quick full circle there. But Joe had 1 win in the 33 car. Ken Schrader had 100 starts exactly in the 33 car.
I did not know that. Kenny Schrader ran the 33.
100, yeah, yeah. That's I mean, that's like for three years or something. Crazy.
Oh, wow. I think he was in the 33 when Dale Earnhardt died. So that's crazy.
That could be. Yeah, yeah. So my spotlight driver this time was Lou Figaro. 9 races with 1 win in the 33. And this is, I don't mean
not
to
a bad percentage.
Bring the mood down necessarily. It's sort of a tragic story, if
Here
you will. He was born in 1920. He was from Southgate, California. So one of the, I mean, maybe
so
the
he was
first
a Yankee.
Maybe the yeah, right. as far as California boys, that's probably one of the first ones. He's well known in the early 30s, just as the Legends series started to like exist. He was well known as, oh, that's the Legends guy. So that's kind of cool. He won the 1953 War Championship for late models. He decided in 1954, I'm going to go race stock cars now. Right at the, you know, toward the beginning and the inception of NASCAR and everything. He won at the half-mile dirt track, Corral Speedway in Gardena, California. And here's the crazy part. So we talked with the, you know, Save the Speedway fellas a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he had a fatal injury at North Wilkesboro.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, yeah, crazy. He died.
Steven Wilson was awesome.
It was either 34, I think it was 34 years old is how old he was. So he died in 1954.
He's 3 years younger than me when he dies.
The crazy part
Holy
is,
crap.
Like, it's been 2 lifetimes since it. That's why I like doing this driver spotlight thing.
It's so crazy.
How long ago that was.
Guys that are just badasses that kind of get lost to history.
Right. And so that's why I love doing this to try to, you know, if there's only 20 people listening, 20 more people will know about Lou Figaro. He was inducted into the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame in 2002. And that award was accepted by his granddaughter, Tracy. So I think that's
awesome.
Really.
Sounds like he should have been in the like TV show Hulk.
Right.
Figaro.
Yeah, he does.
There it is. So hats off.
He probably
off
could beat Hulk up. Like,
and drinks up.
If he was a race car driver in the 40s, he could whoop Hulk's ass.
Oh, no yeah. kidding.
They,
no
didn't,
kidding.
They didn't even know what power steering was for like another 30 years.
You damn right.
Right. Right. And I mean, 9 races in the 33 with a win. And the year that he raced in NASCAR, he won. How many people can say that? That's like Rookie of the Year award.
Well, I certainly can't say that.
Right? I almost cussed right there.
I can't say that.
He almost got Rusty to cuss.
Yeah.
That's like 2 out of the last 3 episodes we almost got Rusty to cuss. Brett Griffin to cuss a bunch last
time. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, you don't have to encourage Brett Griffin all the time.
We've got a bunch of questions from the PTM
Posse. Oh, that's right.
Let's get into those.
So, Tommy, if you're willing to stick with us, like, we do have like 5 or 6.
It looks like 5
yeah,
questions.
Yeah.
So let's do it. William Soquette or William Soquette? We'll say Soquette.
I don't even. We'll just pretend he's French Canadian and say
Soquette. Yeah. Okay. At William Soquett, yeah. He says, "If I like hypothetical stuff, if you had the option to run the entire Xfinity season with a low to mid-level team, or run the Daytona 500 with a low to mid-level team and be done racing for the year, which one would you choose?" I would love the racer perspective on like how prestigious really is the Daytona 500 versus, you know, running a whole Xfinity series.
Well, I'm a little weird.
Okay.
My dreams have changed quite a bit. So when I first got started in racing, I told my dad, I took a class at Bondurant School when I was 16 years old, and we went there for a two-day course. And we were trying to figure out, am I any good at this? Like, is this something that I could do? And the guy told me, he's like, well, you're not going to figure that out in 2 days. Which, that's kind of a funny thing to basically lead into what was my go-kart career. He said, you need to go run go-karts. Okay, fine, whatever. But they asked a question at the school. They said, what is your racing dreams? And I said, I would love to run the ARCA race at Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said. I said, I'd like to do that once, to be able to say that I raced at Daytona. Well, the first time we ever went down there, we finished in the top 10 right behind Danica. with basically with our own car that we bought for 10 grand.
Wow.
So that's you know, that was like, check that off. And then it turned into, wow, I'm racing in NASCAR. Wow, I'm getting to hang around. Wow, you know, I got a team owner that is willing to let me drive his car some. And so my perspective on this has changed. And I think right now you'd ask me, okay, what do? Xfinity season for the whole year or Daytona 500? Well, that's my dream. I mean, that's my dream. My entire life has been to race in the Daytona 500. And if I had an opportunity to do that, I'm just not going to pass it up. Because to me, that's like, I check that one off and I go, you know what? Maybe I've never been in a great ride. Maybe I've never had the greatest career. But I got to race in the Daytona 500. That really happened. And so I would probably pick that over the Xfinity season.
Wow. Well,
so even though that is like still, that would probably be way better for my career than just right. running the Daytona 500. I really believe that would kind of be like the check it off the list. And I don't really feel like I would need anything else from this.
That's a racer thing though. I love the racer answer. And I think Kyle Busch is famous for this.
It needs no anecdote. This is the thing that you love. This is what you want to do.
Right. And Kyle Busch says that, like, when they're like, well, we want races to race 100% every year. And I, you know, respect to Kyle on that. And he's like, I race 100% every time. I'm trying to win every race that I'm in. And I think that extends to this right here where, like, okay, well, I can have a comfortable mid-level team the whole year with Xfinity, but, ooh, I could also run the Daytona 500. Who knows? You know,
like, and also, could I win the Daytona 500 with a mid-level team? Absolutely, I could.
Yes, thank you.
You're
damn right.
God damn it! let's cuss. I mean, let's cuss. Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right because we've seen it happen.
Yes, we have. I love it. Next question is for Mick Rose at @GoDucks42_Mick. Do you think the sealed engine rule in Cup will drastically reduce the amount of practice time the teams will utilize as they learn to extend their engine life? That's a good technical STEM question right there. I'm digging it.
It's really good. Yeah, you know, I really like that NASCAR did this. NASCAR needs to look more at these type of things where they go, okay, this really isn't going to affect the product in any way. Like, it's not going to affect the fan viewing experience, but it's going to save the teams a ton of money. And you almost have to protect the teams from themselves, right? I mean, just stuff as simple as when you run the Daytona 500, you get to have one engine. You don't get to swap after the duels. Just something like that is saving a bunch of money. We've looked at that. We actually called RCR. This is kind of a funny thing. We called RCR one year just to be like, hey, what would it cost? Just crazy thought here to rent an engine for the duel for the Daytona 500. And they threw a number out there, and I'm not going to get into it, but it was basically, yeah, but it's double because you got to get two engines. And I was like, well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You know? Well, now that's not a thing anymore. You know, that's not a real thing anymore. Just you have to have one engine. So that's really cool. I really like that. Is it going to affect the teams? You know, I still think they're going to do their thing. You know, I think they're going to max the engine out. Whatever NASCAR is going to allow them to do, they're going to max it out. And if they go to a 400-mile race and they say, okay, we're going to also get 100 miles worth of practice in, yeah, that's what they're going to do. They're not going to really change what they're doing very much. I wouldn't see that happening.
So Andrew Kantzian at KHANTZIAN asks, now that we've seen a lawsuit over a charter, which, I mean, it's funny to me, like, oh, we have charters now, ha, 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 and now there's a lawsuit with them. Like, oh, of course there is. Litigation and NASCAR just, you know, go just like that. So now that we've seen a lawsuit over a charter and the co-ownership of a charter, that's a good point, too. I mean, charter stuff all
over
the place.
That's the weird part.
What do you foresee?
Co-ownership is weirder.
What do you foresee for the future to be for Cup Series charters? But just talk about charters, you know, whatever you got to say about charters there.
Okay. What is the future for charters?
You know, when I love it when Tommy Joe takes a breath. Okay. All right, hold on. Time to level set.
Well,
all right.
The future of charters.
Everybody get it. Dust off the soapbox. Here it comes.
Great idea. This is a great idea to give an owner a little bit of protection,
mm-hmm.
but what are you really protecting? Like, let's think about this for a second. So you're telling me I got to buy a charter to be able to have the right to lose more money? What am I buying? Like, what the hell, you know, what the hell am I buying? And so that to me is the crazy part of this is like, so why, that's why the field is changing so much. And guess what, fellas, you're going to see fields of 37, 38, 39 cars this year because nobody's going to show up because all of the crummy teams, no offense, already have charters now because there's nobody else to give them to. So let's think about what just happened because I talked about this about a year ago. They said, well, it looks like RCR might go down to three teams or, you know, Roush might contract to a few teams or whatever. So basically every time a cup team, a top level cup team, and I'm even including like RPM and, Levine and who does Allmendinger drive for? JGL or no, JTG? Sorry, JTG.
Yeah, JTG.
So all of those teams, even if they can't get the amount of money that they are really looking for to go do it the right way, they're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Like if Hendrick doesn't get the $30 million, they're just not going to go. And so now they have a charter and they're like, well, this is only worth something if it's out there running every week. So who do I sell it to? Right? Because they got to sell it to somebody. Well, we're reaching the point where those top level $30 million a year, that's happening fewer and fewer and fewer. And so that number of teams keeps getting smaller and smaller. And they're sitting there with a charter and they're like, well, this was supposed to be worth $5 or $10 million. And this is no different than just regular economics, guys. What drives market price? Supply and demand.
The cost of stuff.
That's all it is. So you sit there and you go, okay, well, I got this charter. It's worth $10 million. And then the only person you can sell it to is Carl Long because that's the only person that's got a cup car, right? He's the only person out there.
Yeah.
And so Carl Long goes, yeah, I'm not going to give you $10 million. But it's worth $10 million. And he goes, yeah, I'm just not going to do that. How about you just give it to me, and then I'll pay you a little bit of money out of the prize money.
I'll give you a McDonald's hamburger.
Well, so that was my –
They go, oh, well, okay, that's fine, because then I'll just get it back. And it's like, yeah, you're going to get it back, but who cares? Like, it's not worth squat because there's not any teams. Nobody is signing up to do this. So the people you're going to have in this deal, you're going to have a really small team like a Carl Long – or a, Rick Ware Racing and that kind of stuff. You're going to have like that level of team with a charter, and that's going to wind up just being more and more and more charters. And guys that are in the back of the Xfinity field are going to sit here and go, why am I getting my ass kicked and racing against 45 people and having to qualify in on speed to get paid one-fifth of the money when – there's 37 cars showing up in the cup field. Who cares that I don't have a charter? I can just go fill out the field and not even have to beat anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just ride around on old tires and go with a small crew. And who really gives a crap? And so you're going to start seeing a lot of that. And that those teams are going to eventually get a charter because there's nobody else to give it to. So what's the history of charters? You just need to go, what's the future of NASCAR? Well, if you don't see big budget teams lasting forever, which they won't, if there's less and less sponsorship money available, they won't. So if that number contracts, then the charters are going to get sold to whoever's showing up, and that's going to wind up being smaller and smaller teams. And so it's just going to turn into this really weird market. And so it's really beneficial for the smaller teams because they get a charter for basically nothing because it's not worth anything. But then when a big team gets a big sponsor and they go, oh, well, we actually need a charter for this year, well, they go back to that small team and the small team goes, yeah, it's going to be $5 million because they know they got the money.
Yeah.
So it's really a weird system that you know, at first I was curious, and now I just think that the whole thing is a mess. And the fact that NASCAR created a rule that said, hey, one of the things is it sticks with a number, and if this number stinks for a few years, we can take it back and assign it to somebody else, a competition rule. And it's like, why do you even need a competition rule? You're not even getting 40 cars.
Yeah.
Well, like, what does that say? What does that say about, like, the whole state of affairs? It's like, well, clearly there's an issue here. Or the fact that they're like, well, we'll take it back, and that's the only thing you can do. And then they go, well, I'll lease it to this other team for a year and then get it back. And so that's what the small teams did. They said, well, I own this. It was like Premium Motorsports. They had two or three charters or something like that. And they said, okay, we're going to lease it to another team, and then they finish higher in the points, and then we get it back. And it's like, oh, well, what are you talking about? This number finished 17th in the points last year. And it's like, well, no, it didn't. Like, that was another team. And so just that whole thing just sounds really, really weird to me. Somebody, they need to clean it up.
Somebody on the YouTube said, and I think it perfectly described it, said, boy, this charter thing sure is confusing. And I think exactly what you're saying, Tommy, and maybe we need to do another show where Tommy just talks about charter and what
charters.
Yeah. What the hell's a charter? Yeah. What's going on? We've got a
like, you're not even talking to the expert guy on charters, and it's like, I feel like I know more than the normal person, and I'm still like, I don't even know.
Right. Right. We got a question from NASCAR Nerd at _ NASCAR Nerd. I love this one. So think about, like, what Robbie Gordon did with stadium super trucks. He pretty much invented that as a thing. So if you, Tommy, could start your own racing series from scratch, what would that look like?
It would look like a series with a spec motor. It would look like a series where you really lowered the cost for tires and the need for tires, and you put some sort of rule in there that you could only run a certain amount. It would be a series that involved a lot of short tracks. It would be a series that had body panels that didn't cost a whole lot of money. Some really small level parts, like basic springs that cost $20 and shocks that cost $100 a piece, and just some stuff like that, just simple stuff. It would be a series that didn't involve carbon fiber or tungsten or a lot of this kind of crazy stuff. And go back to short tracks, man. You know, settle it there. I think that's where you really build up a fan base. So it would basically be a late model series, probably.
I was about to ask, what's like the you know, closest equivalent right now? Is it late models?
Yeah, I think that'd probably be the best thing that I could probably come up with. It would just be a late model series with a television contract. Really? So it would basically be like the Pro Cup tour back in the days, which, guys, if you talk to a lot of the guys in the garage, like Shane Huffman, who's a crew chief over there for the 99 team, in the truck series, awesome guy. He was in the Pro Cup days, Timothy Peters. And those guys talk about that like it was just this amazing, unbelievable series that has never been replicated. And if you think about it, that's really what it was. It was basically a late model series that was on TNN.
Oh, TNN, man.
And that's really what it was. That
digging
was Pro
deep.
Cup. And so
Tennessee, Nashville.
I just think something like that, like a national late model tour that had about 10 races or 15 races or something like that. I think that would be probably where I would lean.
Boy, this whole time I was sitting here thinking, IROC. How about IROC? What do you think about IROC? Because Matt DiBenedetto fan, as I was waiting to say it, said, we need IROC back. What's your thoughts on that?
I think IROC's a cool thing, but it just was always so skewed towards the NASCAR guys. I mean, you come up with IROC and you go, okay, here's what it is. And then we're going to only do it on NASCAR tracks. Where there's drafting and they're kind of like stock cars. And it's like, well, that doesn't seem fair.
Like, so it's like week one, let's race these cars at, you know, Atlanta Motor Speedway. And then week two, let's put everybody on a bike at you know, this dirt track in a dome somewhere. A supercross thing.
Like, to me, I think a good place for that would be if you said, okay, we're going to do IROC, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to do Daytona, and then we're going to do, like, Bristol, and then we're going to do a road course.
And then figure eight.
Like, And then like a dirt race or something, you know, like that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to just really diversify the racing series to make it fair for everybody. Like, what good is it to invite Donnie Schatz if you're going to put him on, like, not even have a dirt race? It's like, well, that seems a little weird, you know? Yeah. So I just think that's the only fair way to do it if you were to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Sherwin, we are at our 60-minute mark here. Did we get a Stranger Stang that we're going to – no Stranger Stang this time.
No,
I don't think so. With the 2 days in a row, Asher J. Stang obviously very busy with that. So let's throw this one in there. Eric Kepner asks, and I didn't even get a Twitter handle for Eric Kepner. He might not even be on Twitter.
He don't Twitter. No, but he don't Twitter.
He don't Twitter. So if the company you work for – so this this is a good question considering all the sponsorship talk that we've had. So if the company you work for, so I'm working for this company, they decide to go whole hog and sponsor a cup car, would you surrender your driver allegiances, assuming it's not your driver being sponsored, and walk the company line, or where are you at? I'm trying to think. That's a good question. So Eric, here's my deal. If my company, I'm in software, right? There was a guy who liked NASCAR. There was like two guys who I could talk about NASCAR with in my company. Neither one of them are still with the company. Now we have like a separate office in, we have like 10 offices globally. There's one guy in Grand Rapids. PJ, if you're listening, you're the man. And he likes NASCAR, and he said he actually listens to the show. So who knows? But, I get to talk NASCAR with him now. So, like, and I even forget sometimes. We were on a phone call not too long ago, and we're talking shop or whatever, and he's like, hey, did you see that race last week? I'm like, and it was crazy because I was like, what race are you talking about? Like, what? It didn't even register to me that he was talking about NASCAR because I don't get to talk NASCAR at work.
Sure. Right?
And sure. So here's the thing. If my company decided to sponsor a car, hell yes, I will. I don't care if it's the douche of the universe. I'm all in, but that's because of where I come from in terms of that. But Sherwin, you've had some experience maybe with companies you've worked for that actually sponsored cars.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked for a company that sponsored one of JTD Doherty cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, so how do you – I'm like, I'm absolutely not on the plan of you swap your loyalty – to just because your company is on a car. It's like, I'm going to give them for sure some leeway, right, in terms of I'd love to. Right. I would love to root
like
for
them. If they run into your guy, you're like, well, at least it's my company on the car.
Right.
What's really funny about it, I'd love to talk to you about it offline, Tommy, and maybe we can. I'll keep it.
Sure.
Excuse me, I messed up my mic, but I think being a fan of NASCAR is about being a fan of something that you choose ahead of time, whether it's a manufacturer or a driver or a team. And I think you and I both decided to choose a driver as being very new fans in, 2003. And it's not, whoever I work for, I'll be like, hey, man, I'd love to support what you're doing, but like, this is NASCAR. It's like, that would, to me, that's almost
the
same thing.
I kind of already picked my guy going into this. Yeah, I get it.
To me, it's the same thing as saying, all right, are you okay? So you're a Braves fan, but. We're choosing, the company you work for is choosing to personally sponsor somebody who plays the Marlins. Like, are you a Marlins fan now? No.
It's a good, if we're not talking about, so what if it's the Royals? You know, somebody that we're not even, I'll put on a Royals hat.
Somebody neutral.
We already did that, right? You know, like if it's Ned Yost, who used to be a Brave.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, so, okay.
What if it's a Mariners?
So I rooted for the Royals in that World Series 2 years
ago. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, It's an appropriate response.
Yeah, yeah. Tommy, where are you at?
But I never worked for a company where that would even be a thing.
Yeah.
At this point, I would think that. I mean, when I was growing up, a fan of NASCAR, I was a fan of. Honestly, one of the reasons I like Kyle Petty, my dad liked Kyle Petty, or he liked Richard Petty, and so I kind of just we liked the Petties. But Kyle had the coolest looking cars. Kyle had the Mellow Yellow car.
Yes.
Kyle had the Hot Wheels car. Kyle had the Silver Bullet car. And I was like, oh, those are awesome. And so then I was like, oh, I really like Kyle Petty. And he just turned into my guy. So it was like something. It was completely brand identification. They did a good job on the car. And then I was like, oh, that's my guy right there. And, you know, I didn't really know enough of it going into it. And then you find out about the guy and you're like, yeah, I really do like this guy. Awesome. And so that's, you know, that was kind of my way into it. And I think that is probably still a real thing to a lot of people, right? And that's why I get a little irritated when sponsor and brand identification is jumping around so much. It's like, that's, I couldn't even imagine that if Kyle Petty at the time, like I saw that Hot Wheels car and they're like, oh no, but he's not in the Hot Wheels car this week. He's in the, you know, the Loves Travel Stops car. And you're like, well, what happened to the Hot Wheels car? That one looked awesome.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, yeah, but he's only in that for 5 races this year. You're like, what? Well, what the heck? Well, I can't even. So he's got one car that's yellow and one car that's orange and one that's blue and one that's red. It's like, I can't even find Kyle every week. And I don't know. I just think we really missed the boat on that with the way that sponsorships have gone. And NASCAR and all the teams would sit there and say, well, that's just how things changed. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like we can get back to that somehow if we just make it more affordable and a better, just a better return on the money for brands.
That's a good full circle. And with that, I think we're going to have to close it out. Man, every time we talk, it's like, oh, an hour and 10 minutes later, we better start closing out the show or whatever.
Enjoy it, guys.
Well, no, we got to make it less than however many weeks it's been since we talked. Love doing this thing.
It's the longest gap since we started talking to Tommy.
It could be. Yeah, yeah. So, Tommy, close us out. Tell us what you're up to, where people can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram. Tommy Joe Martin's driving for BJ McLeod Motorsports. If y'all like me, which I don't know why you would, but if y'all like me, you need to follow BJ's team. They got Ryan Ellis, Ray Black Jr.'s, Cesar Baccarella, BJ McLeod, the team page, team BJ McLeod, I think is the name of the thing. I got to remember it now on the Twitter and everything like that. Really good people, all really good people, and I'm just really lucky to have a chance to drive their race cars this year, and really looking forward to a partial season with them and getting back in the seat. My first race is going to be in you guys' neck of the woods, Atlanta, coming up in like two and a half weeks.
Yes, it is.
And I am pumped up, so ready to get back in the seat.
That's awesome. Well, tell BJ and Ryan we'd love to have them on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Will do. We'll do.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd love to see you guys at Atlanta Motor Speedway. We'll figure it out.
We're going to have to find something.
Yes, y'all text me.
I mean, it's right over there. We'll we'll figure it out. So with that, Sherwin, let's close this thing out. Man, Tommy, hang on the line for just a little bit. We'll be there. We'll bring the music up and do our thing. Y'all know where to find us at PTM Podcast. PTMPodcast.com. Search all the social media, all the places where you can listen
to Google
podcasts. Google it, PTM Podcast. You'll find us. There's been people reach out to us recently that just found us randomly. So love you. Thank you for being a part of the show. Thank you for hanging out. As always, I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace.
And I'm joining you all next week. Andrew Sherwin, pregame engineer at Andrew L. Sherwin on the Instagram.
Yeah, we'll do this again. Let's do it again, Sherwin.
Why don't we do this again?
Yeah, we did 133 of them. Let's do 134.
Yeah, maybe next week sometime.
Yeah, maybe we'll retire after that, but we'll at least do 134.
That sounds like a good idea.
It's got big stuff coming up. We got cars on the track this weekend. We'll be talking about that.
Jesse Awuji.
Yes, sir.
PTM alum.
Yes, sir.
ARCA racing on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. We'll talk to y'all next week. Thank you for joining.